As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to the Andy Staples Show. Happy Thanksgiving. It's time to eat. It's time to watch football. Ari Wasserman's here. He's got a house full of people. There's a first time baby watching going on with Ari's mom. Not a lot of nerves going on right now. A lot of nerves. You hanging in there, Ari?
Yeah. No, I'm doing okay. It won't be so bad. It's more of a matter of we did a baby schedule, so it's more of staying on schedule so that we can get her sleeping through the night a little bit sooner.
Yes, sir.
So I'm not afraid of anything terrible happened. I'm more hoping that we can just stay on schedule while I'm up here with you. And I don't want to be tacky or corny, but I just want to say for Thanksgiving, I am thankful for the spot on the show. And I'm happy to be here with you when this gets released on the holiday. So I know we did a random ranking last year of Thanksgiving sides. Stuffing.
I did it again in the print, Dear Andy, by the way.
Yeah. Well, stuffing is number one. I don't think it's even a debate.
Mac and cheese is number one. Dressing is on the list, which would be in the dish rather than stuffed in the bird.
Mac and cheese is just an all year round thing. So I think stuffing.
It's still better than anything else that's on the table in terms of sides.
I think I love stuffing, and I think if Thanksgiving tasted like something, it would be stuffing. But are you making your famous mac this year?
I already made it. It is in the fridge right now. As we record, we're actually recording this. We'll peek behind the curtain. We're recording this Wednesday night, so I have made it. Now it has to bake for about 45 minutes to an hour before it's served. But it's all the ingredients are congealing. I made the roux and the bechamel and all that good stuff. And I cooked the bacon and crumbled it up in there. So yeah,
you could sell that recipe.
I couldn't because I stole it from a restaurant. They could sell it though. Clarkston Union in Clarkston, Michigan could absolutely and should absolutely sell it, but I stole it. So no, I cannot sell it, but no, I'm ready. Tomorrow's cheat day. I get one cheat day every 2 weeks. So this is going to be an epic one. I'm trying to decide if I'm going to get up very early and buy donuts and just pound donuts all morning.
What kind of cheat day guy are you? Are you like one meal that you can eat whatever you want, or are you just completely off the rails for 12 straight hours?
Off the rails, because every other day since this thing started. So we started this diet, I believe it was 66 days ago, my wife and I did, and I have lost 25 pounds. So it's
working.
I was
going to tell you the other day that your face looks super svelte. What is the diet?
It's counting calories. It's an app. I enter my weight. I say I would like to be this weight. I would like to lose this many pounds per week. And I've lost more pounds per week than it says I'm supposed to. So I imagine that it'll slow down pretty soon. But it tells me you can eat this many calories in a day. And so I just hit that. When I eat something, I enter it. When I work out, I enter it. And the idea is to stay in the green every day, and so I stay in the green except on cheat days when I am very much in the red.
Yeah. And then you'll be like 9 days of healthy eating deep by noon tomorrow or on Thanksgiving.
Exactly. Yes. It's going to get ugly. It'll be quite a number at the end of the day.
I like to tell myself on those cheat days where it's completely off the rails that at a certain point the calories stop counting because your body can't possibly count, process all of it. It's like once you've hit like 5,000 calories, I think your body just tries to get rid of it and doesn't try to take what it is because, you know,
I can't handle it. I put every single one into the app, even on cheat days. So my last cheat day was like 6,500 calories. And it was fine. Now, I can't eat as much as I used to, which is fine. I don't need to be eating as much as I used to, but I do plan on enjoying myself because the thing is, don't feel guilty about it because you're getting right back into the swing of things the next day. So there's no real sense in feeling guilty, and I'm ready to roll. This is going to be a great day. There's football, there's food, there's family, you name it. It's everything you want rolled into one day. There's a football game we're going to talk about this Thursday, but because people are used to listening to this podcast on Friday, we are going to push that one a little bit later in the show. And so if you start listening to the show on Friday, when you hear us talking about the Egg Bowl, remember that we haven't seen it yet. And feel free to laugh at us when we make bold predictions about what's going to happen, because you will have already seen it and know what happens. But we do not. We will be time traveling. But let's start on Friday, Ari. I want to start early on Friday. There's this little team that you came into the season loving. Couldn't understand why some of us were skeptical of them. And you turned on them faster than I've seen anyone turn on anything. You hate this team now. You despise, you will bet against them every single time. And for the most part, it felt like Vegas had figured them out. But Ari, the Texas Longhorns are favored against Kansas State in Austin.
It's an automatic bet the other way.
You fading them again?
I mean, I fade them every week since I think I've hit every week. Isn't Kansas State sneaky good, kind of?
They've had some injuries, so they were sneaky good at one point. But sneaky good enough to beat Texas, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, they played a competitive game with Baylor, and then before that, won four in a row. You know, Kansas State, to me, is a 7-4 team over 500 that has certainly navigated the Big 12 conference a lot better than Texas this year. And Texas continues to remain in that have-they-given-up category. And a few of the other teams that were in that category have since fired their coach because they gave up. And I'm very curious to see how Sark finishes the season, but you'd be a crazy person to lay points on Texas right now.
So K-State quarterback Skylar Thompson was hurt in the Baylor game, may or may not play. If you see Skylar Thompson out there, Texas is not winning this game. If he runs out there, K-State's winning. I'm just telling you right now, it's going to be wild. Ari, there's so many crazy games. We are going to go through more games than we normally do on one of these shows because there's so many just odd matchups, numbers, you name it. And this one jumped out at me because, you know, when Texas went to West Virginia last week, West Virginia was favored. I think they were a 4-point favorite. And it felt like, okay, Vegas knows what's up with Texas now. They understand that this team's Dunsky. But when I saw K-State +3, I was like, you gotta be kidding me. People are still betting it.
It kind of seems to me that this, you know, you might want to bet into Texas just because the line isn't what you'd expect it to be. But at a certain point, you got to believe, what is it, 6 in a row they've lost now? I mean, if they lose to Kansas State, that'll be 7 straight losses to close out the year. I don't really know, you know, how much pride this team has left. The last time they played on their home field, they got beaten in overtime by Kansas. So, you know, what are we betting on here? That Texas goes into the offseason with a new sense of pride or momentum, feeling good,
Ari,
about themselves?
Ari, the stories, the narrative, as people like to call it, are going to be epic this offseason. There's going to be a lot of, we've had the hardest workouts we've ever had. This is the closest any Texas team's ever been, blah, 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 blah. But I don't believe any of it. I want to see it on
the game. I'm out. I'm on your. It feels so good to release that burden. And I know people didn't believe me. People didn't believe me. They said, you'll be back. And I had been back every year for the past 5 years, but I am truthfully done. And I actually like the Kansas State side of this game. Like, I would bet it with my real money. Like, this isn't a sports writer picking a game on a podcast. Like, I would bet this.
If Howard plays, if you're feeling reasonably confident that Howard plays, I feel very good about Kansas in this game. Yeah. Let's move to another one. Now, I've seen this line different places. We use the BetMGM lines because they are the official sports book of The Athletic. Iowa, a 1.5-point favorite at Nebraska. I've seen Nebraska as a 1-point favorite in other places.
Nebraska opened the week laying 3.5. And then Adrian Martinez is out, and now Iowa's a 2-point favorite or 1.5-point favorite.
Is anybody going to score in this game? The number's 41. I think that may be high.
All I know is if you're betting the game, you're betting that you think Nebraska will win a close game against a competent opponent.
I wouldn't bet that in a heartbeat.
One of my favorite plays of the week is Iowa.
Yeah. Now, again, the under in this one, even though the number is low, the under still feels pretty good. There's so many
Big Ten unders.
How anybody scores?
How much Big Ten playing an under in the Big Ten when the unders in the low 40s or mid 30s reminds me of that Austin Powers scene where he stays on 5 and says, "I too like to lift dangerously." It's just like, what are we doing? You could certainly win a blackjack hand by staying on 5 against the 10. It's possible. They could have a 6 under there.
Betting
but doesn't mean. But if you stayed on 5 and the dealer busted, that doesn't mean that you're not a moron. So if you bet the under in this game, you might win. But who, like, that seems like to be the most unenjoyable way to watch a football game on earth.
It's going to be an unenjoyable football game anyway, I think. Although, I mean, let's see, if the over hits, it's probably because there were a bunch of turnovers and very short fields.
Bunch of grab ass. And a lot of fields.
Like, how many field goals do two teams need to kick to combine for 42 points?
Yeah, Iowa's offense is dreadful.
It's 14, by the way. I can do the math on that.
Look at you. The turnaround of the year with the math stuff. You're like hitting all the math stuff now.
Not really. That's the only one I got.
Proud of you.
I appreciate that. I didn't even use a formula that people had given us. Everybody trying to ruin our best bit. I don't get it. But all right, let us move on. So we move into Friday night, and this game may or may not have an impact on who plays for the ACC title. Neither of these teams will be doing it, I don't think. But so, well, no, that's not true. One of these teams could if it wins. If it loses, it could help somebody else. So you got the Tar Heels headed to Raleigh, long drive, like, you know, 20 minutes. They are 5.5-point underdogs at NC State. So here's the deal. If the Wolfpack wins... Wolfpack win. I'm messing up my subject verb agreement there. But if NC State wins and if Wake Forest loses to Boston College, I believe NC State is your Atlantic champ. If Boston College on Saturday, if Wake Forest on Saturday beats Boston College, Wake Forest is your Atlantic champ. If NC State wins and, I'm sorry, if NC State loses to North Carolina and Boston College beats Wake Forest, then Clemson is your Atlantic champion. So Mac Brown and Dabo Swinney, probably not best friends on the recruiting trail, but Mac Brown is Dabo Swinney's favorite person on Friday night.
I've lost complete faith in North Carolina this year. I have all the faith in the world in North Carolina's program build, but as it pertains to the product that we've seen on the field this year, it would be really hard to bet North Carolina to win, but
NC State's not been the most consistent outfit in the world.
I do think that it wouldn't be a crazy bunch of events to see Clemson back in the ACC championship game. Like, I would not rule that out. I don't think I would be shocked to see those two things happen.
Although I did see, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, but I saw Boston College flu news. So they're already preparing for Wake Forest's coronation on Saturday. So since Mac got to North Carolina, the scores of this game have been 41-10 North Carolina and 48-21 North Carolina. This is one that North Carolina likes to lay it on thick for recruiting purposes. And I imagine if NC State turns it around on them, they too will want to lay it on thick. So this one could get nasty. This one could get very chippy. And I think that's a fun Friday night game, Ari.
You know, Andy, remind me to get back to this, but Devin Brown just decommitted from USC, which is, I think, moderate news that people who listen to the podcast might know, but or might want to know. So I just thought I'd throw that out there. But
yeah, stars matter. Art.
I don't know what is like the main issue with North Carolina this year in terms. Maybe it's just lack of defense, but even their offense has looked as functional or a little bit harder than I thought it would be.
I don't think their offense is as explosive as it was last year. Whether it's the guys on the outside, I thought with the linebacker and Sam Howell back that they would be able to keep it going, even though Javonte Williams and Michael Carter were gone. De'Ami Brown was gone on the outside, but they just haven't been as explosive offensively. They can get it going, and you've seen them get it going. You saw, especially against Wake Forest, you saw them get it going, but they're just not as consistent as they should be. But I wouldn't touch this game with a 10-foot pole because these teams hate each other. And there are still stakes on it, but let's go.
You know, they've won every other game since this is the non-conference or the beginning of the third week of the season. Every other game,
North Carolina is every other game team.
Yes.
Oh, so and they won last week sets up a win here. Yeah.
But they won. No, they won last week. They beat Wofford. Oh, so they are to lose this
that's
week.
That's right. They beat Wofford. Does that count?
I mean, they won 34-14. I don't know if it does or not.
Yeah, I wouldn't touch this game. But let's go across the country to the Apple Cup. Washington State, coachless Washington State. Actually, they have a coach, an interim coach, and his last name is Dickert, and maybe he ought to be the permanent coach if this all works out. But Washington State is a 1.5-point favorite at Washington. Ari, I know Jimmy Lake got fired a few weeks ago, but still, do you know the last time Washington State won an Apple Cup?
You know, it's funny you just said that because I just thought to myself, when is the last time Washington State won that game? And I don't know the answer, but I know it's a long time ago.
The answer is a 31-28 overtime win in Pullman in 2012.
Yeah.
Do you know the last time that Washington State won an Apple Cup in Seattle?
Hit me with it.
2007, a 42-35 win. That would have been Ty Willingham versus Paul Wolfe. I don't know. Right. I don't think Paul Wolfe won any Apple Cups. So, I mean that is a long, long time ago, and I remember, you know, Jimmy Lake was always the one who bragged the most after the Apple Cup when Mike Leach was there because they said, we're going to do the same thing every time and they never can beat us. Well, now's your chance, Washington State. I just think it's amazing what Jake Dickert has done because remember, there is a chance. Now, it depends on a game on Saturday. It depends on what happens with Oregon and Oregon State, but if Oregon State beats Oregon and Washington State wins the Apple Cup, Washington State goes to the Pac-12 title game.
God, what a crazy conference. Yeah, I am very, very into the idea that Washington State is just a better football team than Washington this year. And I don't even know what anybody would say to push back on that.
No, and I mean they've had some up and down type stuff, but then they go to and house Arizona State. You know, they played Oregon tough for a half, but then fell apart in the second half. But yeah, these are the scenarios. Oregon is winning in the Pac-12 North. If Washington State wins and Oregon State wins, I'm sorry, the Beavers are in. If Washington State and Oregon State both win. So how does Washington State get in? Oh, okay. No. Oh, this is why I should never read anything while I'm doing this, because I already had it in my head correct. Now, then it confused me. Yes. Washington State, if they win the Apple Cup and Oregon State wins, they're in. Oregon needs to win and they're in. Oregon State must beat Oregon and needs Washington to beat Washington State. So yes, the Cougs have a chance to be in the Pac-12 title game after all of this. I mean,
it's so funny that you say that, because two out of those three scenarios are Oregon State and Washington State going to the Pac-12 championship game. And like, I don't know if that is an illustration of wacky conference, fun, exciting, or illustration of how broken that conference is.
It could be a little bit of both. It could be a little bit of both, but we come back, we're going to time travel a little bit. We're going to talk about a game that, if you're listening to this when this podcast drops, it hasn't happened yet. If you're listening to it at your normal time, it's already happened, and feel free to laugh at us about all of the things that we got wrong. We will be right back.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
We got to talk about this Egg Bowl on Thanksgiving night. This is a game I am really, really excited about. We've talked about it already. Ole Miss, you'd think, would be favored, but they are not. Mississippi State is a 1.5-point favorite. This game is in Starkville, clanga clanga. Ari, let's talk about some Egg Bowls past. Did you know that in 1926, when Ole Miss beat Mississippi A&M 7-6, that the fans in the stands came onto the field and fought one another after the game, had a just all-out brawl. The aftermath of that, the peacemaking accords, as you will, that was the creation of the Golden Egg Trophy that is now given to the winner. In 1997, there was an all-out brawl on the field by the players before the game. Mm-hmm. So you've got those. In 1983... they had what was called the Immaculate Deflection. Ole Miss is up 24-23 on Mississippi State. They'd come back from a 17-0 deficit. And then the Bulldogs line up to kick to win the game. Artie Cosby kicks the ball. It looks like it's going in, and a gust of wind knocks it down, and it falls short of the crossbar. But that's still not the most interesting one, because we all watched the most interesting one 2 years ago. Matt Corral comes in for John Rhys Plumlee, leads the Rebels down the field, hits Elijah Moore in the end zone. Elijah Moore, paying homage to DK Metcalf, lifts his leg so he may pee on the goalpost like a dog. He is flagged. The ensuing extra point is much longer, and they miss, and Ole Miss loses, and the staff gets fired. But because the game was so close, nobody at Mississippi State was particularly happy either. They went and lost their bowl game, and their staff got fired. In short, a guy lifted his leg in an attempt to pretend to pee like a dog on the goalpost, and like 70 people got fired.
And now the two people in charge are Mike Leach and Lane Kiffin, which I think are the funniest.
Oh, there's that.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, what would have to happen in the Egg Bowl this year for you to think that it would be one of those moments? Because I think it's just simply hitting the under.
Which could happen.
Yeah,
it's 63.5.
Yeah.
And both defenses have been playing really well.
What if the game was like 14-10 in the fourth quarter?
What if that were
the Egg Bowl this year that we got?
I could see that. I just, you know, there would have to be some weirdness. Like that one of the coaches would have to get thrown out. You know, Lane Kiffin, when Matt Corral sees a guy pop open, Lane Kiffin throws his ball play sheet up. It lands on the field. The receiver trips over it, like stepping on a banana peel style, and the ball sails over his head, and they end up losing. Something like that. I mean, it's got to be something crazy, because it just feels like, and again, these two teams hate each other, I think, more than any. Now, Lane Kiffin and Mike Leach say they don't have any hate in their heart for each other, and they certainly don't. They seem to like each other. I always feel like if you have to recruit against each other at those two schools, you will eventually dislike one another. But right now, they do still like each other.
I don't like that they like each other.
Does that bother you?
Well, it just would be cool if they were both as eccentric as they are and hated each other.
Well, maybe this will be the event. This is like those comic book things. You realize, like, most comic book arch enemies start out as best friends.
Yeah, that's true.
So maybe that's how this will happen.
I just don't think either of them are going to be in Mississippi long enough for them to ever form a hatred.
Do you think Kiffin's gone? Because I'm not sure where he goes. If Miami doesn't move on Manny Diaz, I'm not sure where Kiffin goes.
I don't know. And it wasn't an implication that I think it would be this year. But,
yeah,
you know, it could happen after next year. I think Lane Kiffin, his team is in the top 10 right now. He is a hot commodity again.
Oh, I would agree with that. It's just, I don't know if there's a right fit out there right now. So, but you're
right. What are
right.
the right I mean, fits for Lane Kiffin?
Well, it's what he wants.
But what do you think would be like a natural match for him? Does it have to be a team near an ocean?
I think he'd be pretty good at Florida, but I don't think Florida's offering him the job. I think he could be good at LSU, but I don't think LSU's offering them the job.
But it would never you never like really think about. So I'm going to say this right now. I know Ole Miss might not be as sexy as some of the other programs that are out there, you know, not as sexy as Bama or some of the like Miami, like picturing Lane Kiffin in Miami or Coral Gables is just sun-kissed. Lane was never cooler than when he was at FAU.
The thing about the Miami deal, I'm not sure Miami's a better job than Ole Miss, but it's an easier path than Ole Miss. You're in the easier division of the ACC as opposed to the hardest division in college football. But Ole Miss can pay more. You have better facilities at Ole Miss. You're in the league that people consider better. So I think that's a pretty tough decision to make.
Yeah, but the thing with him is Mississippi is kind of a fitting place for him. And I don't know if I'm making a stretch. You tell me. But I will say the craziest thing I think I've ever seen on ESPN, whether it be a game, whether it be a news segment, anything that you could, was Laramie Tunsil's gas mask revelation.
That was wild.
That I honestly don't think I've ever seen anything crazier than that on live television. And it's just like Ole Miss with the Hugh Freeze stories and all the things about it. It just strikes me as a place that's oddly fitting for Lane. You know, I don't know that like Lane Kiffin would fit in well at just a normal, boring Big Ten school or something. You know what I mean? Like he has to
definitely wouldn't fit in the Big Ten for sure.
He has to be somewhere with edge. You know, and I remember Ohio when I was covering Ohio State, FAU played in Columbus, Ohio, and Lane Kiffin got off the bus and he had like golden brown skin and was wearing a tan blazer and his hair was like bleached back. And it was just like, that guy is like, that is Boca Raton Lane. And it's just like, I don't know what his next job is going to be, but I think A, Mississippi is oddly fitting, and B, whatever his next job is, it has to kind of fit that aura. Does that make sense?
I think so. I think that's a good way to put it, because and I think, you know, I don't think LSU is an edgy place. Yeah, I think Florida might be boring. I think Florida might be considered boring for those purposes. But yeah. I don't think Miami would be.
It's like, I just could never picture him going to a place like Penn State.
No, gosh, no.
You know what I mean? Like, there's a place like that where it's just like, they're pretty good.
Oh, no.
But not really much going on right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of guys with edge, Ari, let's move on to Saturday. Dave Clawson has a chance to lead the Wake Forest Demon Deacons to the ACC Championship game. They're at Boston College. Boston College, little touch of the flu running around. We've seen it. We've seen that with Florida. We've seen that with Florida State. We've seen that with who else has had the flu? Georgia had the flu when they played Tennessee. Got a flu game here, Ari. Flu game. Wake is a 4.5-point favorite. Do you think Wake closes out the ACC Atlantic in this game?
They should, and I hope they do. You know, and I am the most guilty person when it comes to viewing college football through the context of the playoff. And sometimes I unintentionally diminish the value that conference championships mean to universities and their fans. And I'm not saying that Wake, if they win on Saturday and beat BC, will automatically win the ACC, but
Wake Pitt would be a fun game.
Yeah, yeah. But just like the season that they've had, what Dave Clawson put together, they deserve it, man. Like, and it's like you're not supposed to root or have a rooting interest when you're a sports writer, and I get that. But I find myself genuinely rooting for them because it's not something that you see every day, you know. And maybe the ACC was a perfect cocktail of crappiness across the board when they had to be for them to get to this point. But you don't see teams like Wake Forest going and winning a conference championship. And if they don't play, I don't know, is there anybody in the ACC, maybe outside of Clemson after what happened, that they can't beat?
No, they can beat every other team.
Like, they could legitimately win a Power 5 conference this year, and I think that's really cool.
Yeah, and it would be the first time in 15 years. It was only 2006 the last time they won. That was that Riley Skinner team that Jim Grobe coached, and Jim Grobe got offered the Nebraska job. And so it was pretty interesting that it happened this way. And you know, yeah, Clemson being down certainly had something to do with it. But this is just a pretty historic year at Wake Forest. Please read my story on Sam Hartman that published on Thursday in The Athletic. It's not out yet as we're recording this. We're planning on not having it behind the paywall because Sam's got a pretty good message for everybody that I think he'd like everybody to hear, and I'm certainly happy to help him spread it. He wants to make sure, you know, if you feel like you need to talk to somebody, if you feel like you're not okay, then talk to somebody. He's had some trauma in his life and has learned to kind of manage it over the last few months through therapy. And he just wanted to put the message out there that, hey, even if you're a big tough football player, you can go talk to somebody, talk about your feelings, and you can make your life better. And he'll tell you he's made himself a better quarterback through this too. He's become one of the best quarterbacks in the country this year. So, you know, read that story. It'll give you a little window into one of the guys you'll be watching in that Wake Forest Boston College game. All right, let's move to another game on Saturday. This game also has stakes for both teams, but it is a very weird one. And if not for one particular variable, I would say this is a very easy choice here. Florida State is a 2.5-point underdog at Florida. First of all, I'm a little surprised that Florida State's an underdog in this game, given what we've seen from Florida, given that Florida just fired their coach. Now, both teams are 5-6, so the winner of this game goes to a bowl, the loser does not. Which of these two teams, Ari, do you think would like to continue the season, and which one do you think would like for it to be over Saturday?
I mean, if I would have made the line in this game, Andy, I would have laid 2.5 for Florida State. So, correct. So I think that the team that's playing on an upward trajectory right now, and the team that wants to continue to play and seems to be headed in at least the right direction, is the underdog.
Now,
I know the game's at Florida, so
I agree with you, by the way, completely, except for one variable. If this wasn't going on and putting doubt in the back of my mind, I would say take Florida State and the points. Don't even look back, because it's obvious they would like to keep playing. Florida would probably like this to be over. But here's why I pause. Anthony Richardson may start at quarterback for Florida. This is a guy from Gainesville who very much wants to show whoever's getting hired that he's the guy. And I think there's a lot of teammates that would like to show that he's the guy because his ceiling is extremely high. So now, is he good enough to deal with Jermaine Johnson being in his face the entire game? Because I think that's probably going to happen. I don't know. But I imagine he's going to want to, if he winds up starting, if Henry Jones can't go, Anthony Richardson is going to want to put on a show. And I think that adds just a tiniest bit of spice to this.
Yeah, I am looking forward to watching it. And I just feel like we've talked a lot about Richardson this year, and it just, I don't know if it was just misuse by the coach, but it really hasn't played much of a factor. And I know that
that's what we're going to find out. I think, you know, he's got a couple splash plays in the first two games against FAU and USF where, you know, the defenses weren't very good. And then he's got the four drives against LSU where he led him to touchdowns sandwiched by interceptions. So, and then against Georgia did to him what they do to everyone. So, no, we haven't seen much of anything. And whoever gets hired at Florida is going to have to choose between Anthony Richardson and Emory Jones, or maybe they bring in their own guy. I don't know. But this would be his chance to kind of plant a flag before the new guy comes in. So I am fascinated by that.
If you could hire the perfect coach for Florida, would it be Lane Kiffin? And don't consider what the person would do. Who would be your perfect hire there?
I don't know if Lane is my perfect hire there because take Coach O away from Lane and is he that good of a recruiter? At USC, he put together very good classes. At Ole Miss, he's not putting together super high-ranked classes. Like Hugh Freeze signed circles around him at Ole Miss.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there is a difference between being the type of person who tweets funny things and throws his clipboard up in the air and has funny interviews every now and then and being able to go into a living room and close on a family. Yeah. So like, I don't know.
Florida needs someone who is just obsessed, who's not a normal person. Mario Cristobal fits that bill in terms of a player acquisition, but I'm not sure he fits the bill in terms of the on-field coaching piece of it. And so
you could take that risk though, right? You could take that risk there because you're not 100% sure that
I don't think Mario would. I think Mario would stay at Oregon.
Yeah.
It feels like they are headed toward Billy Napier, who does check those recruiting boxes based on his time at Clemson and Alabama. So I think, and then the on-field piece of it, they had a rebuilding year his first year at Louisiana Lafayette. They've been good ever since. So, but that said, Dan Mullen was good just about every year at Mississippi State too. So it's really more about the recruiting part of it because that's the difference. That's where Florida falls short is they're not beating the Georgias, the Alabamas, the Ohio States, the Clemsons for players. And so if Billy Napier can do that, then he'll make them happy. He'll be giving them what they want. And if not, I don't know. And the thing is, I'm not sure who else kind of checks all those boxes for them. Mark Stoops, maybe?
I think I'd go with group of five coach that turned program around over established power five coach at middle tier program that made their program better than it was before at Florida.
Just because of the potentially higher ceiling?
Just because I'm not necessarily sure that hiring somebody that has a similar resume to what Dan Mullen did makes sense to me. It's like Dan Mullen excelled at a smaller school and in the SEC and they played better than people anticipated and then he got the job and then it didn't work out. I don't know that follow the same
thing is you don't know what you don't know. Now, you don't know. I'll tell you, and this guy is, I don't think he's in the mix, but the one I'd love to see at Florida is Jamie Chadwell. I just think he'd be so much fun. I spent a day last week up there with those guys, and they just have a blast playing and coaching football. The question is, could they recruit at that level? There's no way to know because they haven't had to do it yet. They've been at Division II. They've been at FCS. They've been in Group of Five. They've succeeded at every level, be it recruiting or schematically. But again, the elite level of can you compete for national title is a totally different animal.
Could you translate the whole shtick that they have there at Florida?
I think you could. But only if you can get the players. And I have no idea if they can get the players.
Yeah.
You're allowed to have fun. I mean, what doesn't Dabo... Now, Dabo, they're, because they're one of the best now, people look at it the same way. People try to find a way to poke holes in it. But did not Dabo have a ton of fun and his teams have a ton of fun for a long time?
Yeah, having fun is good.
They were
good.
Having pizza parties too.
I think enjoying your team and your coaching staff is probably crucial. You know, enjoying where you are. And I love the mullet thing.
It's pretty awesome. And in person, it's pretty spectacular. Yeah, so,
yeah.
We'll see.
Like, I just
we'll
picture see. Florida. Could Florida just make a living recruiting the best mullets on the continental United States?
I don't think you can win games at an elite level that way. I think at a lower tier Power Five, you could have a team that is dangerous, that wins the games they're supposed to win and is dangerous to like one team a year. You could definitely do that by recruiting the best mullet.
I feel like in my head, and I know you would know having just gone to Coastal Carolina, but in my head, Coastal Carolina is a team full of Tim Riggins from Friday Night Lights.
Very similar. And you have to understand, like, they fit the vibe of Myrtle Beach perfectly. Like, here's what you see when you pull into the gas station at Myrtle Beach. Like, we've all seen the, you know, like the videos with the 64 Impala when it's on the you can hit the switches, yeah. And it's got the hydraulics. So in Myrtle Beach, they do that with like, they'll do it with like a Ford Expedition, except it won't have the switches you can hit where the levels have changed. These dudes are driving a Ford Expedition that looks like it's about to take off into space. Like the back end is down here, way down here. I know this is a visual, great visual podcast that we have going on here, but just imagine that you're in a cockpit facing up, and that is like,
how is that even
street legal? a line of these SUVs driving down the main road in Myrtle Beach last week. And I'm like, what is this? And I'm thinking, no, this is probably just Thursday.
Yeah. I never went to Myrtle Beach when I was in driving distance of it. And I kind of regret that.
It is a spectacular place. Let's stick in the, let's go to another SEC game. This is a big rivalry, a game that we thought was going to be really interesting a few weeks ago. Ari, I'm ready to declare this will not be an interesting game. The Iron Bowl is Alabama, 19.5-point favorite at Auburn. Auburn's a tough place to play when Auburn's good, but Auburn just lost to South Carolina. I think Alabama's going to cover.
Yeah, well, we had some doubt about whether or not Alabama would be, you know, in a position to get to the SEC championship game without losing again, or you know, not getting through the SEC championship game without losing again.
And yeah, my doubt has disappeared.
The doubt seems to be gone, and it's probably more so about Auburn than it is about Alabama, because Alabama didn't look unbeatable last weekend. You know, Arkansas gave them a game.
No, this is definitely more about Auburn. This has everything to do with Auburn and nothing to do with Alabama. It just feels like Auburn, you know, when Bo Nix got hurt, that it became a rebuilding year suddenly. And so I can't in good conscience pick Auburn to even cover, much less win this game.
Yeah. And I don't know, like, to rebuild, you also have to recruit well, and Auburn is like in on nobody. So I don't know what's going on there, but I'm very curious to see if we're in the beginning stages of a flop.
Yeah, and the Harsin era is there's weirdness there. You know, he's been cagey about the vaccination status. They've got a vaccination deadline of December 8th. So we'll see what happens with that, because the recruiting piece of it, you know, you thought Florida was mad about that. Auburn's used to recruiting much better. It's not acceptable to not recruit well at Auburn. And
what if you just, I don't know if you're a psychopath like me who just knows recruiting rankings off the top of their head, guess where Auburn is right now?
Well, they're below Florida, aren't they?
I believe so. Yeah. Oh, way below Florida. Yeah.
They're in the 40s, right? I'm just guessing here.
Actually, they're right. I just looked it up. I was misremembering. I thought Florida was in the low 20s, and it's actually in the 30s at 30, and now Auburn's 33. And both teams only have 13 commitments, and unlike Florida, Auburn doesn't even have a single player in the top 200 committed right now.
Which is a very un-Auburn way to operate.
So I'm very curious if there is any of that Boise magic about, you know,
gems. Auburn didn't sign up for Boise magic.
I know. Like, well, it's the only way that you can Auburn's get through the offseason without putting Newton. I know. It's kind of hard to get through an offseason when you lose and you turn into a rebuilding year, but you don't have players coming in to make you feel like something's changing. So, you know,
Ari, that sounds like a terribly familiar scenario.
There's coaches sure all over the country getting fired because of this.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I just watched that in that exact scenario unfold in Gainesville. So we know
it's also happening in Virginia Tech too.
Yep. We'll be right back. We've got a bunch of other rivalries to talk about, and they get more fierce the further up the ranking you go. We'll be right back.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
We got a lot more rivalries to go, Ari. Clemson, South Carolina is intriguing to me because South Carolina feels feisty these days. And before Clemson's win last weekend against Wake Forest, I would have said South Carolina has a chance to win this sucker outright. But as an 11.5-point dog, I still feel pretty good about South Carolina maybe covering at home.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of points for a team that has taken it to some other SEC teams, but also against a team that has a very, at times, inept offense. And I don't know how intense the Clemson-South Carolina rivalry is or if it's something that you can say throw the records out. But
It's very intense. Once the teams decided not to play bowl games because of a fight they had after the game. So, yeah, it's pretty intense.
I would lean taking the points in this scenario too.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by it. It feels like Clemson has sort of figured things out in terms of offense, not forcing DJ Uiagalelei to do as much. Let the run game shoulder a little more of the load. Will Shipley coming back healthy, I think, has a lot to do with that. That guy's a really good back, Ari. I think he's going to be fantastic going forward. He's only a true freshman this year. I'm excited to see what he becomes, but it does feel like Clemson has, they're not a dynamic offense now, but they kind of know what they are, and it took them a little while to get there. So, I'll be interested to see how that game goes. Another SEC-ACC rivalry that is an interesting line if you have not been watching both teams. Louisville is a 3-point favorite against Kentucky. Louisville had some just ugly fourth quarter stuff where they just couldn't get over the hump. They had that game where they paid tribute to Lamar Jackson and just annihilated Syracuse. And Syracuse had been fairly decent up to that point. And then obviously Malik Cunningham goes nuts on Duke last week. Now they're a 3-point favorite against Kentucky in a rivalry that, you know, this one's more intense than people realize. But also, Mark Stoops, his name is up there for jobs, particularly LSU.
I mean, I texted you earlier in the week and said, why are they favored?
Yeah. Why are they favored? Because Malik Cunningham is putting up video game numbers. That's why.
Yeah. Very curious to see how that all pans out. I'm very curious to see how Mark Stoops is viewed as a job, as a candidate for big jobs. Like, I don't know if it's smoke, I don't know if it's whatever, but I'm very curious to see if he will get offered a job like LSU or mm-hmm. something that big. And I'm even more curious to see if that happens, how he does there.
Well, and you mentioned your concern that Mark Stoops is a Dan Mullen type because Dan Mullen won at Mississippi State.
I'm saying Mark it Stoops could be. Won at Kentucky. I respect the
hell out of Mark Stoops. Right, we don't know because, yeah. You know, Stoops is – You've sung the praises of Mark Stoops as a recruiter. You've talked to him in depth about his recruiting strategy. So the question is, does that strategy travel? Because he's used something unique about Kentucky in that it is the closest SEC school to Big Ten country, and that you can take kids from Ohio and Western PA and say, instead of playing at whatever non-Ohio State Big Ten school you want to throw out there, drive to Lexington and play for me. And I think it's a pretty good strategy. That's not the strategy that works at LSU. LSU, you are required
essentially. It's not the strategy. It's like the exact opposite, right? Yeah. I mean, like there's no recruiting gems there. It's five-star prospects every position. Yeah. Go get them. That's a different ball game. That's a different job. I'm not saying Mark Stoops can't do that job. But it's a different job. It's like hiring me to cover politics for a different publication. We're both journalists, not the same job.
It's not the same thing. That's a really good analogy. I had not thought about it that way, but I like that analogy. We talked about this game as it relates to the Apple Cup, which is going to be played Friday night. But Oregon State at Oregon. Oregon State's a touchdown underdog. Oregon State won this game last year. Jonathan Smith has done a fabulous. I got caught in the middle. A fantabulous, phenomenal job at Oregon State. I'm making up words to describe how good a job the man has done at Oregon State. If they can beat Oregon, holy cow.
Oregon. Year he's one of the best. He's a candidate for a coaching job that is not being discussed nearly enough at all. I haven't heard his name pop up for the coaching job.
It's interesting. When somebody's at their alma mater, we assume they're there to stay. But if your alma mater is Oregon State, and maybe you aspire to win national titles, maybe you don't stay. But
I just think there's a limit at certain places of what you could possibly achieve, and he's pushing the brink of that right now. I mean, he's about a game and some help away from being in the Pac-12 Oregon State being in the Pac-12 championship game. And I'm not necessarily sure. I think that Oregon's going to be handling this game. I think I'm taking the 7 here. Oregon State is a shockingly competent football team.
Oregon State beats teams the way Utah beats teams. And you saw what happened when Oregon played Utah. Now, I don't think Oregon State's as good as Utah, but they'll punch you in the mouth. And if you don't respond, they'll keep doing it. So, yeah, Oregon has to bounce back here. I mean, this season for Oregon, because of the way it started, because of the talent level on that team, it's an abject failure if they don't reach the Pac-12 title game. I'm not crazy saying that, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, absolutely not. This is a team that the hopes were a lot higher for that. And you can't lose your rivalry game and then miss it as a result of that, especially when your rival's Oregon State.
All right. One more, and then we get to the two biggies that have playoff implications. We go to the Land-Grant Trophy game. Penn State, 1.5-point favorite on the road at Michigan State. Listen, Ari, Michigan State got destroyed last week, but it isn't like Penn State's been lighting the world on fire. Should Penn State be favored in this game?
You know, I've been trying to figure out exactly who is what in the Big Ten East. These teams are so close to me. Penn State, I mean, I guess I don't even know how to break it down. I feel like they're so
I don't either.
I feel like they're so even. And like, and I can't wait to get to the Michigan game, but I just can't really decipher who is better than who in these scenarios. And it's like, what's the spread's 1.5?
1.5.
Sounds like Michigan, or it sounds like Las Vegas is having a pretty hard time deciphering it too.
Yeah, because I don't know. I mean, a week ago, I would think Michigan State would have been a 3-point favorite in this game at home. 4-point favorite maybe, but after getting housed by Ohio State, now nobody believes him anymore. So
here's the thing, I'll say, at least Michigan State has something to play for. you know, and they're at home. And I know that you can get your soul sucked out of your chest when you lose the way that Michigan State lost. And you might not like want to look in on the film room or really pay attention to what's going on. And you can kind of check out. But depending on how the Michigan game stacks up, I think we're going to be in a very interesting scenario where the committee is going to decide who goes to the Rose Bowl. And looking good and being competent in games that don't involve Ohio State or Michigan is going to be good. This is one of the best resume builders that Michigan State can have, regardless of ranking, because the committee – it's still funny the way the committee uses Penn State. They don't rank them, but they give you credit for beating them. And I feel like Penn State is one of the few teams that has that – I don't know why, but it's always been funny to me.
Well, and that's the thing. So if Michigan-Ohio State isn't close and Ohio State wins – and Michigan State beats Penn State. They're both 10-2. Michigan State won the head-to-head. Sparty's probably in the Rose Bowl at that point.
I mean, I hope that the committee would do right by them. I know there's some people who are worked up about that. But
this is one of those time traveler games. Like, if you could travel back, because obviously, Michigan State people very disappointed after the way last week went. But if you could travel back to the start of the season and say, the Spartans will be playing Penn State in the regular season finale with a distinct possibility of going to the Rose Bowl, what do you think the average Michigan State fan would have said to you in August?
10 years, $105 million.
they would have said, I'll take whatever it is you're smoking. And please give me some more of that. So or whatever brownie you're eating or gummy bear you're eating. It's been a great season for them. They need to bounce back. But, you know, they've got to win this one to have a chance to play in the Rose Bowl. And if Ohio State does what it's been doing to Michigan the last few meetings, then Sparty's going there if they can win this game. So it does feel like their stakes are probably a little higher.
And here's the thing, too. It's like, everybody was kind of wound up about where Michigan State and Michigan were ranked in the playoff committee. But I do think that even though it's not the old bowl, or I mean the old poll viewpoints for voters, that recency bias does play a part. And if Michigan loses by 100 to Ohio State on Saturday, then their loss happening more recently should put Michigan State back in poll position there, especially if Michigan State beats Penn State.
And I think if Michigan State is playing for a New Year's Six Bowl, definitely. Like, if they win, they're going to a New Year's Six Bowl. It's a matter of which one. If they lose, they're probably in the Citrus Bowl. So that's maybe where the distinction comes. But let us stay in the Big Ten. Two big rivalry games, one early, one late. The one early is Ohio State and Michigan. The winner wins the Big Ten East. Back up.
For what are we navigating here? Who goes where?
If Michigan beats Ohio State,
Michigan wins the Big Ten East.
They do, because it's three-way. The Ohio State beat Michigan State. Yeah, okay, yeah. Gotcha. All right. So the winner wins the Big Ten East.
And Michigan State has a second loss.
Yeah. The winner will be favored in the Big Ten title game for sure. Ohio State probably favored by more. Michigan already did beat Wisconsin. The winner has a very good chance of going to the playoff. This is not like for Ohio State, the people are just like, yeah, I know. That's every year for us. But for Michigan, like, it feels like there's a chance. It does feel that way, Ari. Now, I was there in 2018. In Columbus, when it felt like Michigan had a chance. I remember watching those teams warm up. I'm like, okay, maybe. Michigan was favored. They'd been playing really well. And then Ohio State just torched them. How does Michigan avoid that?
Getting to C.J. Stroud, using some of those really, really talented defensive ends. Here's the thing. We can do this again. Let's try to convince ourselves that this game is going to be close. It's a home game. Big Ten championship is on the line, potentially playoff spot on the line. Jim Harbaugh's legitimacy as a coach on the line. New staff with Mike Hart on it, who understands the rivalry. The team seems to be fighting together. They didn't give up after a heartbreaking loss to Michigan State. All these different storylines. And it's just like, please, somebody explain to me why Ohio State's not going to score 48 points in this game. just explain it to me.
I know. I got to see it to believe it.
And here's the thing about Ohio State in this game, too. When's the last time Ohio State played poorly in this game? So they're not just getting Ohio State, Michigan. They're already getting the best version of Ohio State, most likely.
Correct.
Because they're more than motivated to play in this game all year. So, you know, a lot of times teams will get a sleepwalking Ohio State, and the next thing you know, it's a close game at the end of the third quarter. But Michigan has to, if Michigan's ever going to beat Ohio State, they're going to have to beat the best version of Ohio State. That's really, really hard. So, like, to me, I think that Jim Harbaugh did a tremendous job this year. Getting to 10 wins is no easy task, especially considering the fact that they were in a pretty bad spot at the end of last year. But if Michigan wins this game, we'll write about it, we'll talk about it, we'll analyze it. I'm done trying to expect it. You know, like, it's just,
yeah,
it's a lopsided rivalry, and one team wins by 180% of the time they play. So, you know, play a close game, and then we'll discuss it, if that makes sense.
It does make sense, and Saturday night, we'll discuss it at length, because it'll be like, oh my God, they finally did it. But another game Saturday, and this is the one that when we fire up the podcast mics, this is the one that'll just ended. Bedlam, possibly the last Bedlam ever in Stillwater. Oklahoma State is a 4-point favorite. Ari, do you know how many times Oklahoma State has beaten Oklahoma since 2003?
Oh, man, this two.
That's correct. Two. 2011, when they were, you know, potentially a national title contender, they had lost at Iowa State. If there was a playoff, they certainly would have made it, but they got left out of the BCS title game. That was Alabama-LSU that year, and that essentially helped create the playoff. The other one was 2014, the don't kick to Tyreek Hill game, or to Tyreek Hill game. And then since then, which, by the way, coincides with the arrival of Lincoln Riley in Norman as the offensive coordinator and then the head coach, Oklahoma has won every game. A couple of them have been close. That Kyler Murray game in Norman, where there was a 2-point conversion that Oklahoma State had that they could win it. But it feels like every time Oklahoma State gets close, Lucy pulls the football away. This doesn't feel like that. Because that defense that Jim Knowles has for the Cowboys is nasty. Caleb Williams, you and I talk about how amazing he is, how instinctual he is. But the thing is, his instincts do great things and his instincts do terrible things. And this is the kind of defense that can force you into some really awful decisions.
Yeah, I don't know how Oklahoma scores like Oklahoma needs to score in this game. I like Oklahoma State. I really do.
The only way this works for Oklahoma is if Oklahoma's defense forces some turnovers, maybe even creates a defensive score, has some quick momentum changes, because Oklahoma State just grinds teams down. Like, they played Texas Tech last week, and Texas Tech kept it close. And then just eventually you're just like, Texas Tech is never going to score. Like, these guys just grind you all the way down. And so I'm very intrigued to see that. There's a lot of playoff intrigue with this too, because whoever wins is very much in the mix to make the playoff if they win the Big 12 championship game the next week. So, you know, whoever wins it has to win two in a row. But there's a very real chance of making the playoff. And the stakes, the intensity, the fact that this game may not be back in Stillwater for a while. I don't think it's going to be like Texas and A&M, where they just kind of point at each other and refuse to play. Oklahoma's already said, look, we still want to play the game. Oklahoma State may have some hard feelings for a while, but I think eventually they'll come around and play. But I don't know how long that's going to take. And since there's never been a team, or not never, but Since 2000, there hasn't been a team that announced they were going to another conference that stayed more than one full football season in the old league. So I don't know if we're going to see a Bedlam next year. I think we are. But 2 years from now, will we see it back in Stillwater? I don't know. The odds seem unlikely. So I say we enjoy this while we can.
Yeah, sad to think about.
I know. That makes me mad. I hope that cooler heads prevail and they figure out a way to play the game. If the playoffs go into 12 teams anyway, don't pull the, oh, we don't want the strength of schedule, you know, all that. Just play the game. So hopefully that happens. But if Oklahoma State could win it and then be like, oh, you want to go to the SEC now? Okay, bye. Hey, remember the last time we played? We kicked your ass.
Yeah, you're an SEC chance. Yeah.
I can definitely see that happening. And oh my God, there will be so many SEC chants, mocking SEC chants in Stillwater if Oklahoma State wins this game. I am here for the pettiness. I am here for the intrigue. I am here for the intensity from the Egg Bowl Thanksgiving night through Bedlam on Saturday night. This is going to be an epic weekend of college football, and Ari and I will be here to wrap it all up for you. After the games on Saturday, we will talk to you then.